This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Recently, a close friend of mine experienced an unexpected loss. Watching their family struggle emotionally and financially made me stop and think seriously about my own family's future. As the primary provider, I know how important it is to make sure that if anything ever happened to me, my family would still be able to manage. So I realized that without life insurance, my family would be left with overwhelming financial burdens. I looked into coverage before, but the process always felt complicated, got endless forms, phone calls, and medical exams, made everything take weeks. So that's why Ethos stood out to me. Their process is simple and 100% online. There's no medical exam required, just a few health questions, and you get a quote in as little as 10 minutes. In many cases, you can even receive same-day coverage without ever leaving your house. Ethos offers up to $3 million in coverage, with some policies starting as low as $2 a day, billed monthly. It's a trustworthy company that's changing the way people think about life insurance. So protect your family's financial future with life insurance from Ethos. Get your free quote at ethos.com/Brian. That's ethos.com/Brian. Application times may vary. Rates may vary.
Hi, I'm here to pick up my son, Milo.
There's no Milo here.
Who picked up my son from school?
Streaming only on Peacock.
I'm going to need the name of everyone that could have a connection.
You don't understand. It was just the five of us.
So this was all planned.
What are you going to do?
I will do whatever it takes to get my son back.
I honestly didn't see this coming. These nice people killing each other.
All Her Fault, a new series streaming now only on Peacock.
Welcome back, everybody. Brian Kilmeade here. It's my pleasure to bring in Samuel Katz, New York Times bestselling author with more than 20 books on the Arab-Israeli conflict. There's plenty to write about. He's got a brand new book out now called Architect of Espionage, The Man Who Built Israel's Mossad into the World's Boldest Intelligence Force. And there's not a person on the planet who's not in awe of what the Mossad has done. We're able to pull off especially since the October 7th attack, between what they were able to, how they were able to infiltrate Iran, how what they were able to do with the world's premier terror force, and that's Hezbollah, and then the way they've been able to help take apart Hamas, even though they're not dead yet. Samuel Katz, welcome back.
Thank you so much.
First off, when you look at what the Mossad has done, I think perhaps the world had to take notice about Iran. The way when it was time to take out Iran's nuclear assets, the knowledge that they had, the assassination of the officers, the location of the facilities, without giving away best practices, how long was Mossad focused on Iran?
Well over 20 years. When Meir Dagan, the subject of the book, took over the Mossad in 2002, he had two primary missions. One was to fight and join the United States and the other international partners in the global war on terror. And second was to prevent rogue nations, primarily Iran, from gathering weapons of mass destruction, specifically nuclear weapons. And a very concerted effort was made to create networks, gather intelligence, become embedded in the very fabric of the Iranian program so that at a point of opportunity or national necessity, those assets could be taken out.
So there was mass executions in Iran afterwards. They thought everybody was compliant. So was it do you think you have a compliant Iranian society there that hated their government to the point where there might be cooperation with Israel?
So one of the luxuries of battling a nation like Iran, which is a very strict, authoritarian, religious fundamentalist nation, is that there are a lot of minorities in the country who are persecuted and who would love nothing more than to see regime change. So they are natural allies of a nation like Israel or the United States to assist in doing anything to weaken and compromise the ruling mullahs in Tehran.
Perhaps the most impressive was after the funeral of the president of Iran, when Hamas leadership went there for the funeral, they would basically take it out in their villas.
Yes.
That's absolutely incredible.
The remarkable thing is that after October 7th, Israeli intelligence rebounded. It took a major blow, but it also showed that the focus of Israeli intelligence, primarily the Mossad, was always Hezbollah and Iran, that they viewed as existential threats, and Hamas was a lesser threat. And of course, history proved that Hamas had a potent ability to attack and make Israel suffer. But the real threat, the threat to the existence of the Jewish state and Western democracies nearby in Europe, was Iran and its proxies.
So you were saying before that there was a October 7th was supposed to be much worse. What was there was supposed to be a coordination between Hezbollah and Hamas?
So Hamas, for all of the mastery that they've celebrated on social media about how brilliant they were on October 7th, they stole the playbook from Hezbollah. In 2018 and 19, the Israel Defense Forces sealed a group of tunnels that Hezbollah had dug deep in the mountains connecting the two countries. And they were supposed to be used as attack avenues to capture a section of northern Israel, kill scores of civilians, and take scores more back as hostages. The thinking of Hamas leadership was that they will strike on October 7th, the holiday when Israel was not on top alertness. Their allies in Hezbollah would join in with missiles and attacks through tunnels. The Iranians and the Syrians and the Iraqis would see that Israel is at its most vulnerable. It's under attack on two fronts. It would join in, and then there would be another uprising, a third intifada in the West Bank, where Palestinian terror groups would strike out, and Israel would be incredibly vulnerable. And indeed, after the October 7th invasion, Israel fought a war on seven fronts.
Really? No doubt about it. But Hezbollah was slow off the mark because the communication was not great between the two terror groups?
Hezbollah was slow off the mark because in 2006, the last time it attacked Israel, the blow that the Israelis dealt to them was crippling. And the Mossad also initiated scores of operations, including Ponzi schemes, where it impoverished billionaires who worked for Hezbollah, who were in the Hezbollah leadership. So Hezbollah didn't want to engage in an all-scale war. This was not something they had been forewarned about. And instead, they just sent out missiles piecemeal to show the Arab street that they were still...
And they cleared out the northern part of Israel, right?
They did. There were hundreds of thousands of Israelis who were refugees because they couldn't live there because of the rocket attacks. And then when Gaza was more or less stabilized, Israel...
Did the pager attack.
Did the pager attack. And the pager attack was perhaps one of the most remarkable operations...
Ever.
And it... could be said it took 15 to 18 years from conception.
2006?
Yeah. In 2006, after the Lebanon War, I write about it in the book, Mayor Dagan sat with his deputies, and Hezbollah had fought a bitter war against Israel. And they were, one late night, they were thinking, what should we do? And one of them said, why don't we just kill them all? And the operation took its progress. They were figuring how, when... And the pager became one of the tools, then the radios. And it was perhaps the most decisive blow ever against a terror group that up until 9/11 killed more Americans than any other group out there.
And then a couple of days ago, they took out one of the Hezbollah leaders, I think, in the fourth floor of an apartment.
Yes.
So the intelligence is incredible. That's the point.
The intelligence is pinpoint and accurate, and Hezbollah and the enemies of Israel have now been so compromised that there is very little that they do that the Israelis ultimately don't become aware of.
The name of the book is The Architect of Espionage, the man who built Israel's Mossad into the world's boldest intelligence force. And not many people are not in awe, even if you're an enemy of Israel, and there are some, you have to be in awe of what they were able to accomplish and be intimidated as well. And that, I think, will help the Abraham Accords as soon as they get some semblance of peace. But when you talk about Hamas, Hamas is not dead yet. A couple of days ago, they found a tunnel complex with 90 rooms in it. And they said it's the biggest complex we've found so far. But you said that there's a lot of crazy stuff that they already found that surprised them in those tunnels.
The tunnel network exceeds the scope of the London Underground. The amount of money that was used to build it at the expense of the local Gazans is enormous.
Using foreign aid, right?
Using in many cases, U.S. taxpayer money, U.S. aid and all the programs that were seized. The entire Gaza Strip was to be used as a launching pad of terror. It was. The citizens of Gaza were used as human shields and human sacrifices. And Israel is perhaps the one nation on earth that is first world, that has a European standard of living, that is neighbors with a third world nation, third world entity, that fights a barbaric type of war where human beings are nothing more than fodder.
And they get global condemnation if any civilian dies who's never been targeted. Those are casualties that look to be avoided. You drop flyers, you text message people, you move people out the best you can in a very dense environment. But the world likes to condemn you guys when the focus for the other guys is to kill civilians.
Absolutely. Not one Gazan was ever allowed to enter one of the deep Hamas tunnels that could have prevented.
And where do those tunnels go? Schools? Mosques?
Homes? Yeah. UN facilities? Yeah. Hospitals? Everything that could be termed as a civilian target, as a no-go target. Anything flying the UN flag will undoubtedly host a major network of Hamas tunnels.
Nearly home. Isn't home where we all want to be? Reba here for Realtor.com, the pro's number one most trusted app. Finding a home is like dating. You're not just looking for a place to live. You're searching for the one. That's where Realtor.com comes in. Like any good matchmaker, they know exactly where to look. With over 500,000 new real listings straight from the pros every month, you could find your perfect match today. Ranch style with a pool, barn dominium with an in-law suite, Realtor.com's got them. Modern craftsman with a big yard and a treehouse out back, Realtor.com will have you saying, yep, that's the one. No more swiping. It's time to start finding. Download the Realtor.com app today, because you're nearly home. Make it real with Realtor.com.
Pros number one most trusted app based on August 2024 proprietary survey. Over 500,000 new listings every month based on average new for sale and rental listings, February 2024 through January 2025.
Every day, America's first responders stand ready. Firefighters, law enforcement, paramedics, doctors, dispatchers, and people who put themselves on the line for public safety. But keeping them connected in moments of crisis has not been easy. That's why Congress authorized a nationwide network for public safety. Today, that promise is fulfilled through FirstNet. It's the only nationwide network built with and for first responders. So whether it's a big city, rural town, or remote tribal community, FirstNet helps ensure no call for help goes unanswered. It gives first responders priority access, never throttles their communications in the U.S., helping them to connect across agencies when it matters most. This isn't just a network. It's a lifeline, a bipartisan commitment to America's public safety built to serve those who serve us all. FirstNet is the backbone of our nation's emergency response and will continue to be in the future. FirstNet, built with AT&T. Learn more on firstnet.com/public safety first. And they're all, do you say Hamas is infiltrated everywhere? They're all over the place, through Europe. And there certainly have people, we've heard from hostages, and you probably know more. I know you know more. The hostages said that there was direct contact with these protests, these college protests in America.
Yes. Well, don't get me started on that. But
I don't mind you starting on that.
Okay.
Our audience loves that.
Well, I'll tell you the connection between October 7th and what's going on today. October 7th proved to Israel, first of all, that forget the nation status, they're Jews. And they're going to be targeted and hunted no matter what. Second, it proved that Israel lives in the Middle East. And all that separates that European lifestyle from third world terror, a Somalian Mogadishu, is a dirt road and a barbed wire fence. It also proved that the diplomats and the million-pound brains that have tried to figure out two-state solution never got it right. And from free Palestine and from river to the sea is all about eradicating the Jewish state, and that what was the plan all along. And it shows that the next war for the Middle East is already underway. It's not being fought in the rubble of Gaza. It's not being waged in the rolling hills of southern Lebanon. It's being fought on the streets of London, and sadly now on the streets of New York City and at Gracie Mansion and City Hall.
You believe that he is a jihadist?
Mamdani?
Yeah.
I think Mamdani is someone who supports the destruction of the Jewish state. His father is a professor who has glorified suicide bombers, and his mother is a filmmaker who has never allowed any of her films to be shown in Israel out of hatred for the state of Israel. So he was brought up, he was reared and built into what he became.
Samuel Katz is our guest, and we're talking about, well, just let's talk about immigration for a second. It looks like Europe is waking up. First, they were condemning us here in America for doing what Trump's doing. You seal the border, you find out the criminals amongst us. They just today, I think, finally were condemning any association with CARE and the Muslim Brotherhood. But now Europe, for the longest time, they condemned us. But now they're trying to follow the Denmark model. Denmark says if you're going to come, that Denmark's confining asylum seekers to dorm rooms in a former sanitarium, requiring them reimburse taxpayers. The Swedish lawmakers may require public employers to turn in suspected illegal immigrants and authorities. France and the UK are instituting strict language policies, and some are considering one of the most controversial measures, deporting illegal immigrants into countries other than their own. They're finally waking up, and they're realizing they've been totally infiltrated. They're losing their identity, and the illegal immigrants, I don't care about their circumstances. They have no interest in their country. They want to bring their mores and their values to the country they're going to. And we see that France and England is a mess, and they're trying to do it here in Texas, and it just got stopped. But do you think we're sobering up in time, Sam?
I don't know if it's in time. The the Democratic left-wing elements of the Democratic Party and the Muslim Brotherhood and those forces have formed what has traditionally been known as the Red-Green Alliance. And they've infiltrated politics. They've infiltrated universities. They've absolutely hijacked the American mind into thinking that the West is bad and everything anti-Western is good. October 7th became a rallying cry.
Mm-hmm.
It became a cult, a new religion, anti-Semitism, anti-Zionism. The keffiyeh became the new prayer shawl. The left-wing elements of the Democratic Party became its temple. And social media became its cathedral, where the views are spewed and the hatred is just spread out of control. And it needs to be stopped one way or the other. Otherwise, we... in the West, Western nations, in Europe and here, will find ourselves in very dire straits. And Canada is the perfect example of that, that has gone completely backward in its view of its very core principles and ideals.
Right. And they got the left-wing guy there now who thinks they're better off with China than America.
Yes.
So that's fascinating. So a couple of things to bring up. Number one, how do you view Qatar?
So Qatar is both the person who sets fire to your home and then the one who brings the hose and helps you put out the fire. They play both sides to the middle very, very well. They are a small nation, one that...
So rich.
Qatar doesn't fight wars. It buys outcomes. And they also, its leaders, are avowed followers of the Muslim Brotherhood. And they've hosted the Taliban. Hamas leaders watched October 7th unfold live in Doha. They have so much power in the influence they have purchased. They're very, very hard to counter. And I believe that one of the moves made by President Trump to ban the Muslim Brotherhood is one step in the direction to check them in.
Because Qatar's complex, because they come here and they say, hey, you know what? Israel likes the fact that they have somebody to talk to. They know where to reach Hamas when they have to deal with them prior to October 7th. But Sam, we're just scratching the surface. We've got to have you back. Congratulations on the book. The Architect of Espionage, the man who built Israel's Mossad into the world's boldest intelligence force, Samuel M. Katz. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
This is Ainsley Earhart. Thank you for joining me for the 52-episode podcast series, The Life of Jesus.
A listening experience that will provide hope, comfort, and understanding of the greatest story ever told. Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.